ponder those sounds. This is Cog Dog. I'm hoping this is slice 6. It's been a long time since I sliced, and it's time to get back in the habit. So here I am, literally between a rock and another rock, literally wedged. I'm at the head of Lower Cottonwood Wash at Joshua Tree National Monument. I believe it's a monument or park. It's a national thing owned by the U.S. government. 100 miles, some, maybe more, maybe less, east of L.A. And needed a detour. So I came here. I'd been here once before. And this is a reflective spot. So I walked up this wide sandy wash. If you don't know what a wash is, it's a desert thing. It's a dry riverbed. It's all sand and trees that you can tell at times have torrential water going through there, because these trees are literally barely grabbing on. They look like bent over old men clinging with their roots to the ground, all kind of knocked over, dried out, bent, torn. Palo Verde, acacia, I guess, other sorts of desert tree shrubs, but they're alive. And then where it kind of came around this corner is just kind of a circular little basin surrounded by, and here's Scott Lowe, I'm going to do my picture words. It's the same kind of rock I was talking about before when you chided me for not describing. This again is granite, which is a intrusive igneous rock. It's magma that comes in below the surface of the earth and never gets to erupt as a volcano because it's hot and melted from other rocks. It slowly crystallizes and you get these larger crystals, a lot of quartz, feldspar. I see some biotite in here. And when it weathers, it's kind of uniform kind of rock, so there's no natural breaks in it, and it tends to break at 90 degree angles. So you see lots of vertical cracks I can see to the left of me, and horizontal ones as well. And then as it weathers, because the water over time starts chipping away the corners, it gets rounded off. It looks like giant toy blocks. It looks like, Scott Lowe, like that thing where you take mud as a kid and you sort of squeeze it and it sort of drops. It goes bloop, bloop, bloop. And you form these kind of blobular little piles. And it's definitely great for rock climbers because of the crack. But so at the head of this is like about a 10, 15, maybe 20 foot dry waterfall. You know, when the water runs, this thing is raging and you wouldn't stand where I am. And there's just a barest of cracks about 2 or 3 inches wide where it's coming through. And there's water dripping here. That's what you're hearing. Let me get the phone closer. The slow melt-off of water in the desert, which to me is one of the magical, most magical and beautiful and hopeful sounds there is. So how could I not reflect? Also, hopefully between these two rocks, I'm a little bit out of the wind, which is blowing pretty strong today. Let's get crouched down here. So, reflecting on reflecting, 2012, I'm not going to talk as much about things coming up. I am going to make sort of a dedication to doing this. Not every day. It's pretty intensive to do the recording, then the editing, then the listening, re-listening, and then the reflecting and write-up. It's a fair amount of work. So, I like to commit to 2 or 3 of these a week, especially as I start out with this venture of teaching DS-106, which I'll be thinking about a lot, obviously, because it actually starts in about a week. And my first bits, I'm going to be online for it. But I am a teacher, and I haven't taught since like maybe late 90s when I taught an animation course at Maricopa. So, of course, I feel rusty. I know DS-106... fairly well, but it's one thing to take it, it's another thing to teach it, and it's somewhat of a improvisational performance, having spent a day earlier this week with Jim Groom. There's no recipe, for it. And he has full confidence, and I partial confidence, just because it's new. But so I'm going to use the Slices model of Scott Lowe to reflect on my own process of becoming a teacher, because I've taught informally and I help others. But it's obviously a different form of teaching when being in the classroom, and I want to see what it's all about. And that's my journey, of which are many continuing off of the end of last year's road odyssey and whatever odysseys crop up in 2012. Speaking of which, I had sent some holiday emails to people. I'm still behind on sending those greetings, so some of you haven't gotten them. And some of you may never, because I'll probably just get focused on other things. But I got a one-sentence response from my friend Raj Bora up in Edmonton, who met me for lunch. Actually, I was like almost an hour and a half late for lunch, and Raj waited for me. And I've known Raj through Darcy and through the conference I presented at up in Edmonton about a year or two ago. And I just enjoy his thinking and his photography, so we share that. And he asked me a question, and he said, and I haven't really focused on this or even answered yet, so I'm going to try to start answering this question. He said, "What did you learn about yourself on this trip, Alan?" And I could have done the quick answer, but I wanted to let it percolate a while, like that water sound. And there's lots of directions, of course, I could answer it. The most basic one that I learned on that six-month travel trip was that I could do it. There was a little bit of question whether, not whether I had to drive, literally, to do it, but whether I would want to do it and whether I would finish. And I get focused on finishing as well as doing it. So the question was, you know, would I be okay driving crazy distances, staying at people's houses, camping out, but basically living out of my truck. And I like my base in Strawberry. It's very comfortable. It's definitely my home. And the question is, can I be without that? Can I make do? And definitely I can. And so I know I can do that. And there's other forms of that mode that I'd like to get into, maybe with less stuff, maybe with a backpack, maybe in other parts of the world, maybe with a lot less stuff, or maybe just continuing that mode. And there's so many more places I didn't see than I did see. So that's one thing. Another thing is, and I know this, but I made a couple really large personal mistakes that hurt people. And I'm not going to go into the story of that. And it happens. And I learned a lot about, of course, I knew I could screw up. But, you know, that bit about, like, doing something so wrong and then sorting out later and looking back and trying to go, how could I have done something so wrong? I mean, it seems so obvious in hindsight. And living with that, facing up to regrets, which I've blogged about, and with that TED thing by Catherine Schultz. And now I'm reading her book, which is something about, I can't remember. It's basically learning about from being wrong, and it's about sort of the rightness of being wrong in life and what you learn about yourself from that. So I've learned I can do that, but also what I learned, Raj, is that we go on. You know, at the times when we're in really bad situations where it feels like everything has fallen down on top of us, like these giant boulders that were buried, and we can't even see beyond the next hour, the next day maybe, the morning. Will we see the morning? And for the most part, we do. So that's what I learned. I learned, you know, obvious. But it helps to say that I have a lot of really good friends out there. You know, I knew that people, you know, appreciate some of the things I do, and they were gracious. But, you know, a lot of people really went all out to not just welcome me, but to care, and to want to, you know, do things to make even some of the short visits worthwhile. And that matters, is being with people, especially where they live, in their towns. You know, getting a personalized tour of Moose Jaw with Dean Shoresky on his bicycle, or seeing the Dernan Farm with Heather and Mike. Getting to meet my friend Pat Looney Hiker in the town of Fountain Inn, South Carolina. Staying with Cindy Jennings in her home in South Carolina, actually not that far away. Those are really precious bits. And what I learned about myself is that getting to spend time with people and understanding how they live is really important and can teach me a lot. And that I really focus on this power of connectedness online. But it's completely blown up in order of magnitude, more blown up in a good sense, when you've gotten these chances to spend time in people's space. And there's, you know, I can't get to the tangible in that, Raj, but it's important to me, and it's going to be a factor going forward. So those are some of the things I learned about myself. I learned I have a lot of improvement, especially, my physical fitness, because I didn't bike ride as much as I'd like to, and that'll be all my things that I will do without going on resolutions in 2012. And doing this, being back in nature, which was so important to me when I was in my late 20s and early 30s. It was what I lived for. It was my passion to just go out with the pack and spend a couple days out in the wilderness alone or with a friend. And be in the space of nature and get that right sense of perspective. Even just the short, you know, this is about a mile and a half walk to the desert, to this kind of, this again, this dry, sandy riverbed bounded on both sides by these lumpy canyons. You know, it's that thing about, you know, being in the space, the perspective, appreciating and respecting the fact that these plant species and the animals that I can't see have come to this really form of perfect equilibrium to survive and thrive here, and that we so easily put it out of balance, but it's just so calming. And I'm kind of losing my train of thought as I'm just watching this water drip down this crack and flow to the bottom. There's like a little tiny pool in the rock at the bottom of this crack, and it goes through a little V into the sand, and you can see the sand is wet, and that disappears. So this water, you know, has made this journey, and it's not done, you know. It's not evaporating here. It's actually flowing underground through the sand, so it's kind of an underground river, and that's just freaking awesome. So that's probably, I'm going to call this a complete slice. At about 13 and a half minutes. I'm gonna, oh wow, look at these nice little cracks to leverage myself up. I could actually see how I could ratchet myself up this crack, but I think I'm gonna walk up the side. Come out of this little mini canyon with this rock surface. It's at almost a perfect 45 degree angle. Hand is like sliding down it, and it goes up about 20 feet. It's like a perfect sliding board. If I was about maybe 12 years old, I wouldn't even think twice. I wouldn't be sitting down here talking. I would definitely be climbing all over this thing. And that's it. I'm gonna go around the corner there. It looks like there's a little road that goes to the top, and peek there, and then amble back to the car, and keep on this micro journey that I'm doing this week. You'll have to read about that on the blog. So wherever you're at, you know, get, if you're not reflecting, think about starting, reflect on reflecting. I'm hooked on it. So I'm going to be back in the groove and the action again, hopefully 2 or 3 times a week. 2 is decent. 3 is bonus. 4 would be A plus if I was grading myself, but it's not really on volume. In fact, it doesn't really matter. I'm just doing it. And the light. Just thinking about the value of sharp light out here in the blue skies. That is one of the reasons I love this place. I love this place. Slice of Life, number 6, coming to you live from a crack in the rock in Joshua Tree National Monument.